And that was Joseph Scarno and the Anarchist World this week, and we'll be returning to that later on in the program. Now, James has just joined us in the studio. So hello to James, back from his lovely trip to Sydney, I'm sure.
Yes, it was all fun.
Sydney is good as usual.
Oh, it's pretty humid.
Well, I've come to the conclusion that our politicians have lost the plot completely. I think in the past week, and it's not just John Howard being a moron in the bush, you know, the past week or so, we've all sorts of ludicrous statements coming out, and I think the best one by far was Kerry Tucker coming out and saying, oh, we really need more MLAs in Canberra, and we should have 21, not 17 now. She quite obviously has a vested interest in this. If we had a few more politicians, I might get a few more Greens in, because it would, unless they increase the number of seats, would lower the quota needed to get elected, and so we'd have more Greens and more, God help us, more of Paul Osborne's mob and a few other sundry bits and pieces. But generally, whether they're Greens or Paul Osborne's mob or Labour, Liberal, they're still politicians, and we don't really want more of them. But the rationale for this was that we're underrepresented compared to the rest of Australia. Now, why did it never occur to these people that the rest of Australia might be overrepresented? I mean, why is it, on everything else, when the ACT is different from everywhere else, when our health spending per head is different from the rest of Australia, or our education spending per head is different from the rest of Australia, then we have to change it to align ourselves with the rest of Australia. And that usually means less. Less money on health spending, less money on education, whatever. So why is it with politicians we want more? I mean, why can't this time the rest of Australia align themselves with us and get rid of a few of the bastards? Now, I find this, if we are underrepresented, then that is no doubt partly because of the way we have an electoral system that returns 12 people from Tasmania to the Senate and 2 from the ACT and 2 from the Northern Territory, when the combined population of the Northern Territory and the ACT, which gets 4 seats, is just a bit more than Tasmania. Not hugely more, but it is more or comparatively. And so if we're underrepresented, maybe we might want to take a look at that. But what exactly would more politicians give us? And they are a better range of people to choose from. Well, I think if you talk to the average person on the street, they might disagree that the lot we've got there now is pretty bad, true. But if we have more of them, now if they're, you know, the best of the best we can get with 17, how are we going to get any better with 21? Of course, it'll give us more time to it'll give us more people to, you know, decide the local municipal type things that other people would have councils for. I mean, how many people do you need to organise a garbage collection, and to get people out to fix, you know, buggered electricity wires or buggered, you know, sewage pipes? I think if someone's got a broken sewage pipe in their backyard, they're not so stupid they might not notice it. unless they don't have a nose, I suppose. But, and I think they're quite capable of, you know, calling up... is it still ACT who handles responsibilities for all that, or have they privatised that as well? Calling up ACT or whoever and getting someone out to look at it. You don't need a bunch of elected people to look after things like that. They're things that look after themselves. Not entirely, but, you know, there's people out there who can collect garbage and fix up, you know, broken sewage pipes, so that's sort of a bit of a furphy. What other municipal functions? Mowing ovals and grass? Well, doesn't seem to be too much of that happening, so maybe if you've got a bit more of that, but that had absolutely nothing to do with the number of people in the Legislative Assembly, but everything to do with the fact that they sacked half the people, well, all of the people who used to do that, and contractors out to the private contractors, who, of course, actually, through no fault of their own, just we don't have enough people to do it all. But say, and that's because they just don't have the staff to do it. So the ACT government sacked all these people, got less people back in to do it, and then wonder why they can't get the job done. So, really, I don't see why we need more politicians. I think I'd love to see a lot less politicians in the ACT, 17 less to be precise, because really they don't serve any useful purpose. Well, they provide ammunition on this show. We get to talk about them ad nauseum, and you get sick of us talking about them ad nauseum, but I don't see any purpose in having more politicians. You know, if we need more people making decisions about things, why not let us make the decisions about them? After all, we're the ones out here who know what's going on.
Well, not us.
Well, you've ruined my master plan there, James. We're all set to take over. But people out there like us, yeah, as an example, are in a far better position of knowing what's going on than a bunch of 17, 21, 21,000 people, you know, stuck in some little committee room, parliamentary chamber are capable of knowing what's going on. Other stupid things our politicians have said in the past week. Well, Bill Stefaniak, what a lovely, charming man who has ruined the reputation Australia has of always having fat police ministers by being the education minister.
Well, I like his statement he said a while back about the Activate magazine, that he says, I believe in free speech, but this goes too far. So, in fact, he doesn't believe in free speech.
No, half of those not in the know, but he all should be. Activate is a little magazine.
Sort of anarchist.
So to speak. Trying to explain anarchy to the younger generation, not old crusty bastards like Bill Stefaniak, who you could explain it to him 1,000 times and he's still come up with 1,000,000 distortions. And he got a little upset when James and some other people had the temerity to stand outside a school. It was Lake Tuggeranong College or something, or Canberra High or something, whatever.
Right.
I can't remember. It was a while back. And had the temerity to hand it out, and a few teachers got a little upset, and Bill Stefaniak and his colleague, Bill Wood, over in the Labor Party. What a charming young man he was. I think he was featured on our very first show, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Way back last year. And they got a little upset about that and said, oh, it's not right for school children to think. And Bill Stefaniak is doing his darnest to ensure that is happening by cutting funding to schools. And what was his wonderful statement earlier on in the week saying, oh, it's disgraceful that ACT schools are hoarding $20 million of money. And New South Wales Education Minister John Aquilina said a similar statement a few weeks ago about New South Wales schools. Now, $20 million when you divide it up amongst all the schools in Canberra isn't actually that much per school. But we always get told the age pension is not our right. We have to, you know, have superannuation to save for our future. And If we spend all the money we get at work each week and then get sacked and go on the dole, our friendly person at the dole office, who, while implementing their 6 weeks if we can get the dole policy, will say, oh, well, you should have been saving for your future. So why is it when a bunch of schools, in the face of government cutbacks, are doing the very sensible thing, and if they're not necessarily having to spend money, they're actually saving it for whatever they might be saving it for, which might be to, you know, keep their buildings in one piece, might be to employ extra teachers, might be to, you know, actually make some interesting classes for this. That's probably asking a bit much. So that actually show what the government keeps telling everyone else they have to do is be prudent, have good financial management, and they do it. And then the government comes down and says, oh, this is a disgraceful thing. They're hoarding this money, and I'll put all this emotional bullshit out about, oh, it's ruining the future for your kiddies by not having this money. When one of the very reasons schools are saving this money is because they know they might not get it next year or the year after.
See, what the politicians are worried about is that they won't be able to pull the schools into line by punishing them with nasty funding cutbacks.
Well, that's the thing. They've actually gone to school-based management in the ACT, where it's actually a very convenient way of deflecting the blame for education cutbacks off the government onto individual schools by saying, oh, the school's responsible, but unfortunately it's backfired in this case by schools being quite sensible. But as we've said on the show before, I mean, more money for schools, if they keep schools where they are, isn't really going to make any difference. But, you know, it might help, you know, kids get learn how to read and write and do very basic things that are one of the few useful purposes that schools actually serve. And so, Bill, I think you're on a... I mean, you're on a losing streak every time you open your mouth, which you have that great big foot of yours in it. But this time, you've done it once again. And speaking of schools, and speaking of our glorious Lord and Master, Jackboot Johnny, he's getting a bit of a hard run on this show today, but we don't care because he deserves it. Came up with a wonderful suggestion. Schools should be open from 9 to 5, so to align their hours with hours of the parents, so parents don't have to worry about getting after-school care or worrying about what their kids are doing after school. I've got a better idea for John Howard. Why don't we make working hours 9 till 3?
Excellent.
I think that's a far better suggestion. It'll be popular with workers. And with no loss of pay, we must add here. It'll be popular with workers, it'll be popular with kiddies who won't have to go to school for an extra 2 hours. It'll be, you know, popular with the unemployed who will suddenly find themselves being able to get jobs. So here's John Howard's opportunity to please 90% of the population. And do you think he's going to do it? No, because, it might cost a bit of money to our wonderful friends in boardrooms and shareholders around the country, and there probably are some industries that generally couldn't afford it, but, you know, as I always say, if you can't do it, put your books on the table for independent scrutiny, and if you can't, well, you can't. But if you can, which is a lot of big companies can, then let them do it. Now, speaking of the reduced working week in France, this week was the sort of start of the 35-hour with no loss of pay working week in France, which was government policy, strangely enough, in France last year, in the face of protestations from employers and other sundry parasites who have a vested interest in making sure people work a long time. They actually put this policy through, it actually got through Parliament and approved, and basically had to be implemented by this week. Well, if you're a large workplace, it had to be implemented by this week. Smaller workplaces, which are less than 20 employees, have until next year, I think, or maybe the year after to do it. And it's not even, I mean, the reduction to 35 hours isn't even that much of a reduction. I mean, the standard working week in France was 39 hours. And so they've cut it by 4 hours, no loss of pay, so we're talking about a quite modest pay rise per hour, say of, I'm trying to do some sums in my head here, I'm going to do it very badly, of about a tenth, literally. I mean, very rough, 4 hours and 40 is a tenth, so get a 10% pay rise. It's not much, it's quite reasonable given, you know, what workers lost out to inflation and general cuts in conditions over the years, but of course there are a large number of employers who scream bloody murder, and one particular industry was the transport industry, both truckers and bus drivers and the like. Now, we talked about the working week in France being 39 hours. For truck drivers, try about 70 hours. It's probably closer to the mark, and that's from an occupational health and safety view and the safety of other road users. It's not exactly the ideal situation to have truck drivers working sort of 70-hour weeks, because that would imply they're not getting a lot of sleep, or, well, if they are, they're not doing anything else like eating. And all in all, not being conducive to a safe work environment for both the truck drivers, or a safe, you know, driving environment for other road users. You might find themselves on the wrong end of a semi-trailer after the driver falls asleep. But and so the people who run transport companies have been given an exemption from reducing the working hours of truck drivers, which I thought, here's one area where I don't think anyone could argue against a reduction in working hours. Even the bastards who employ these people could argue reduction in working hours. And they've basically been given an exemption from implementing this. And the exemption they were given was not so much, well, they can still work 35 hours a week, but you have to cut their salary. Now, I can imagine that going from 70 hours a week to 35 hours a week is going to be just a slight cut in salary if their take-home pay is not maintained. So, and the French truck drivers, in a wonderful display that we can, sort of wonderful lead that we can all follow, basically said, well, get stuffed. We're not working 70 hours a week if no one else has to, and I think that's a perfectly valid argument. And so they've gone on strike, and were joined by their colleagues who drive buses and trains and the like, and so hopefully we'll have some good news for that to report in the near future. And also, in other news of short working weeks, building workers in Victoria are going to go on strike next Monday. They want a 36-hour working week with, a 24% pay rise. Outrageous, you might say. Well, not really, again, given what workers have lost out, you know, since the wage-fixing days of the Fraser government, of all governments. You talk about Labor government being the party of the workers. Well, actually, it was in terms of, indexing wages to inflation, indexing tax brackets to inflation even, which is a very brave move, was actually all done by the Fraser government, not without extreme pressure from the unions, of course. They never would have done it without that. Wasn't Malcolm Fraser's a nice person? He was a complete bastard. Anyone who lived under the Fraser years would know. Sections 45D and E of the Trade Practices Act spring to mind about secondary boycotts. But again, the Victorian building workers go on strike next Monday, and we hope they have a bit of success in their games. And I hope everyone else in Victoria and around the country can sort of follow that lead, and basically just, tell your boss we want a 36-hour working week. For those of us who already have a 36-hour working week, we might go a little bit lower. And we hope they have success in there. And, of course, Peter Reith and he's the Treasurer, Peter Costello, were crying poor over this, saying, oh, these poor companies can't afford it, and it'll lead to inflation. No, wage rises do not lead to inflation. Well, they do it very indirectly, but only because these scummy companies want to put their prices up instead of absorbing it into their quite substantial profits. And Peter Reith came out and said, oh, these people are just going to take no prisoners in getting their wage rise. And, well, I hope he's right. That's the first time I hope Peter Reith is right on that one. Well, we're going to take a break with some music now. Music this week comes from the Cosmic Psychos, and this track is called No Complications. You're tuned to Community Radio 2XX on 8.3 FM, and this is Radio Freedom Anarchy on the airwaves. Now, before that music break, we were busy slagging off politicians, and why not? They deserve it. We can't, we can let it go by without mentioning it, but a British MP by the name of Nigel Jones was attacked with a 60-centimetre sword last week. Well, it was unfortunate that one of his staffers was killed, because it's just... Well, may have just been the person doing their job, may have been a complete bastard like a lot of ministerial staffers are, just jobs for the boys and girls, but he's now in hospital and we don't feel sorry for him one little bit, because I'm not sure quite what the motivation of this person who went and hit him with a 60-centimetre sword. It's rather unusual. We can think of a few, yeah.
He was probably nuts.
This is true, but we can think of a few reasons why he might have done it, but 60-centimetre sword is a rather unusual method of going about it.
Yeah, that's the thing that sticks out.
Nuts, yeah, well. And so he's come out with the quite outrageous suggestion that politicians should have 24-hour-a-day bodyguards. Now, why? I mean, why don't you think about it, fellas? Why do people go and hit you with 60-centimetre swords, besides the fact that they're nuts? It's because they don't like you, they don't want you, and they don't need you. I mean, as we were mentioning with Legislative Assembly, there is nothing useful that politicians do, unless you're a business owner, but that's another matter altogether. I'm not, James isn't, 99% of the population isn't. And so, I suppose a few more politicians getting hit by 60-centimetre swords might encourage a few of them just to piss off, then that will certainly be a very positive statement, but I think there are slightly better ways we can do it. Guy Fawkes rings to mind. Yes, we're getting a bit silly here. Well, I'm getting a bit silly anyway. We don't feel sorry for Nigel Jones. We just had to mention it because it is so funny, but he actually got attacked with a 60-centimetre sword. And I'm going to keep mentioning the 60-centimetre sword facet of this because it's so hilarious.
No, it's pretty realistic, though. I mean, attacking people, politicians with swords and Guy Fawkes pointing them up. What was that guy who drove his...
Clifton Moss.
Now, these guys are a bit...
The only person who's ever entered Australian Parliament with honest intentions. With the exception of a couple of hundred odd people in 1996, and a few BHP miners in 82, I think it was.
That's right. Well, you know, apart from these sort of these nuts, there are ways you can get back at the politicians, you know, occupy offices. This has had a long history of doing that sort of thing. What are other ways you can sort of make their job hard for them?
Don't vote.
Don't vote.
If 80% of the population didn't vote and they're sitting there saying, oh, we're the government, you've got to listen to what we say, and no one voted for you guys. Get real.
Yeah, the thing is, in our country we've got this compulsory voting and preferential system, so we're forced to vote, and then we're basically forced to vote for either one of the major parties.
But it just goes to show how much confidence they have in their own system. They have to force people to participate in it. I mean, if democracy is such a wonderful thing, make it voluntary.
Yep.
And then those people who don't vote, well, you can say, oh, it's your own fault. You can't criticise what we're doing, which is a load of bullshit because, no one asked you to do what you're doing. I mean, you chose to do what you're doing. It's not an essential job in society. It's not like you're a bloody doctor or garbage collector or sewage worker or bus driver or anything actually useful. You're just a bunch of parasites sitting there, and so... we'll say, Nigel, get well soon, so you can come back and someone can do it to you again. Before politicians get offended and start crying, we just might go back to the anarchist world this week in Melbourne, where Joe is now going to be talking with a French anarchist by the name of Roland Cray. I think that's what I've written down on my little notes here. It was probably a totally shocking phonetic attempt at a French name, but here it is anyway.